Tom and Noel Crow join us once again here on The Morning Blend to provide our weekly American Catholic History lesson. Catholic Americans who contributed to our nation by virtue of their faith. And today, well, let's start off with something controversial. Is it Neumann or Newman? Because Neumann sounds like something that someone from Boston might say, but who are we talking about today?
Yeah, that's something when we did our episode on this saint, we wrestled with, are we going to say Neumann, John Neumann, or John Newman? So, but when we were in contact with, or, you know, did research through Philadelphia, where he was the fourth bishop, they say Newman. So, huh. Okay, that's good enough for us. We will say Newman.
Well, then, yeah. St. John Newman.
So, St. John Newman, yes. So something that I find interesting, in the United States, we have, wait, we were counting them earlier, how many, 9 saints?
Yeah.
And 2 of them start off our year, right, bang, right after New Year's. Blink and they're gone.
Yeah. Elizabeth Ann Seton and then John Neumann.
I'm back.
Newman, excuse me.
Newman on back-to-back days. Yeah. So we thought we would start off talking about them.
So John Newman, he's the first American male to be canonized. He was born over in Bohemia, which is in modern-day Czech Republic. He was born in 1811 to, you know, Catholic family. He grew up. He was a good student. He went to seminary. He decided he wanted to be a missionary here in the United States, but...
So actually, before that, just to separate him from John Henry Newman, who people might get confused with, he is actually John Nepomucene Newman, named after St. John Nepomucene, who is a patron saint of Bohemia.
Right. So John Nepomucene Newman, so born in 1811... He went to seminary. He graduated from seminary in 1835, but his diocese had so many people being ordained and so many men being ordained, they just basically said, we got nothing for you. They had a lot of priests they were ordaining and then had no assignments for them. Hmm. So he said, okay, I'm going to go over to the States. But since he wasn't ordained, there's a thing called the Leopoldine Society, which is named after one of the emperors or kings over there. And they provided money, support, to send missionaries to the New World. Well, since he wasn't ordained, he couldn't get help from them. So he had to fundraise on his own. He managed to. He also wrote to bishops over here in the States and didn't get answers from many. But one did send him a response saying, sure, come over. However, he never received it because he had already boarded a ship and was crossing the ocean when that letter was going back to him. So he arrives in New York City in 1836, finds out where Bishop Dubois, the third bishop of New York, lives. Goes to his house, knocks at the door, and says, hi, I'm John Nepomucene Newman, and I'm ready to be ordained. And Bishop Dubois said, fantastic, but I just dropped the letter in the mail. How'd you already get it?
But, divine intervention.
Dubois said, great, I'll ordain you now. I need help. And what Newman said was, well, can I have a few days just to, like, get settled? So 17 days later, he was ordained for the Diocese of New York. It wasn't an archdiocese yet. And he was sent out to Buffalo initially, and he was the only priest out there. On his way there, he stopped in Rochester, where there was a Redemptorist parish. This was his first experience of the Redemptorist order. He stayed there for a little bit and then proceeded to Buffalo. He was the only priest in the Buffalo region, a massive region, and he had to finish building the church, and basically he was getting burned out after being there for a couple of years. One of the Redemptorist priests was his spiritual director, and he said, hey, I think I want to be a Redemptorist. Now, by this point, Bishop Dubois had died, and his successor was Dagger John Hughes, who was a bit pugnacious. He's one of my favorite characters, but he was not one to be trifled with. So when the Redemptorist who welcomed him into the order said, sure, now we just have to tell your bishop. In fact, you just go to Pittsburgh and let me handle the bishop. So Newman just leaves Buffalo, which canon law allowed him to do. He left Buffalo and went to Pittsburgh, where he was assigned to St. Philomena, which is in the Strip District of Pittsburgh. The church is long gone, unfortunately. And he became pastor of St. Philomena there in Pittsburgh. The Redemptorists dealt with Bishop Hughes. He wasn't happy, but there's nothing he could do about it. He had to accept it. So now the one cool thing about when Newman was at St. Philomena, his assistant was Francis Xavier Silos, who is himself a blessed, will probably be canonized. So they had a pretty cool couple of priests there for a while, there in the 1830s, late 1830s into the 1840s. So he's in Pittsburgh for a few years, And then he becomes so well known and so much in demand, essentially. He travels all through the region on horseback. He basically takes on a role as a circuit riding priest. It was during this time that he actually came here to Steubenville and and ministered at St. Peter, which is our parish. It's the historic parish downtown. His signature is actually in our baptismal records. Wow. So, yeah, we have a little connection to St. John Newman here. He went as far up as Norwalk, Ohio, which is up on Lake Erie. He was in this area for a while. Then he was actually assigned to a Redemptorist parish in New York City for a little while, which I'm sure Bishop Hughes loved. and then he was sent to Baltimore. While he was in Baltimore, people loved him so much, they said, hey, we're going to make you the superior of the Redemptorist here in America. He did not want this, and he was not good at it. He was not into administration, did not care for it. You know, he did it for the time, but then he was like, okay, I'm out. But he didn't stay out of administration long, because in 1851, Francis Kenrick, the third bishop of Philadelphia, was named the Archbishop of Baltimore, and he named Newman to be his successor as fourth bishop of Philadelphia. Newman did not want this. He actually asked religious sisters, pray that this may be taken away. This would be a terrible calamity for the church. Well, God had other ideas. So he was, in fact, consecrated fourth bishop of Philadelphia in 1852. He wasn't the best administrator, but he was an incredibly holy man. He dealt well with the issue of trusteeism. Trusteeism is a big topic in the early church in this country, where the wealthy people who actually built the buildings, since there weren't really priests in a diocesan structure, wealthy people, Catholics, would build the buildings, and then they owned the land. So they basically said, you know, we're in control of a lot of things here. We're the trustees. He had to deal with that because it was who's actually in charge here? But when he arrived, Philadelphia, the Catholic structure of Philadelphia had like two schools. When he died in 1860, they had over 100. He built so many schools. The number of parishes exploded. He is responsible for the incredible Cathedral Basilica of Saints Peter and Paul, which is in a very prominent place in the main drag of Philadelphia. But this was the time, 1840s, 1850s. New parish churches were completed at a rate of nearly one per month.
Wow.
So much construction happening in Philadelphia at the time. Anti-Catholicism was still a major thing here in Philadelphia. This was only 8 years after the Know-Nothings in Philadelphia had rioted and burned down a big section of Catholic Philadelphia, killed a bunch of Irishmen, and burned down a few parishes. And this was actually something that Bishop Hughes, who was a priest of Philadelphia at the time, took with him to New York. And anyway, another big story there, a few of them. But that's, if you ever see the Basilica, Cathedral Basilica of Saints Peter and Paul, this is why there are no windows down on the lower level. The windows are all up high, so they couldn't be smashed easily, because there was still enough anti-Catholicism in the area at the time. But he was an incredible pastor.
Established the 40 hours devotion.
Yes.
Encouraged religious sisters to set up an establishment. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just built so much in Philadelphia.
Yes. And then he just one day in 1860, he's walking along doing errands, and he just collapsed and died on the street. They're not sure what he died of. He just, exhaustion, collapsed.
Where he writes.
Yeah. I mean, he was a very humble man. He was dealing with, Philadelphia was probably the wealthiest city in the country at the time, the most old money. And here's this humble, he was tiny, he was like 5 foot tall man going around in a threadbare cassock, and he's the bishop.
Wow.
Incredibly holy man. The cult for him began very quickly. His tomb in the crypt level of the Redemptorist Church quickly became a site of pilgrimage. And they eventually improved it and put something besides just a dirt floor down there. And he's still there. And it's now an incredible shrine.
St. John Newman, pray for us. Excellent. People want to learn more about what you do or listen to more of these great stories. Where can they find you?
Oh, you can find us at AmericanCatholicHistory.org.